Hello, my name is Dr. Thomas Abond, and I'm an early childhood specialist with over 30 years of experience in the field. I am interviewing my colleague and friend, Astora Roberts, today on her experience working with children in both Head Start and privately owned centers. Astora is retired, but she still has a passion for the field. I am hoping that you will find this interview helpful when working with children and families.
Okay, so what advice would you have for...
For people just entering the field of early childhood, they're going to need a lot of patience, and they're going to have to truly understand that children today need a lot of guidance.
Okay, so what were your hard days like? What would you constitute as a hard day in the field?
A Monday. Because children are returning to school from the weekend. There is no routine or daily schedule at home. They just do as they choose. And if you set a daily routine where you've got children where everyone is cooperating, and when you say cooperating, that means that the children are in tune with the teacher and you're working together, it makes the job a lot easier. But when the children come back on Monday, it's like, what happened? That's because at home, children a lot of times are not given, I guess you want to say, guidelines. They do as they want to do. And it makes it hard on the teacher because she spent the majority of her day getting children back to where they were as opposed to how they came in on a Monday. A lot of children are hungry on a Monday because, unfortunately, they didn't have sufficient meals at home to eat. So they're hungry. So a lot of children are tired because there were no guidelines that you're going to take a nap today or you're going to go to bed early because you have school. They're allowed to stay up, play video games all night. It's okay with mama. But it really, really makes it hard on that teacher on a Monday morning because the kids are just out of control in a lot of cases. And it makes your job hard. And you spend half your day getting things back lined up. And then when Tuesday comes, it's like, okay, here we go. We're going to have a great day today. So there's a lot of factors that impact those teachers into having a rough day. And that rough day is normally on a Monday because of the weekend.
Okay, so in terms of Mondays, and so I just want to like recap what I understand you to be saying here. And that is that their total routine is thrown off by the things that they're able to do on the weekend. And so when they come back Monday, it's sort of like starting fresh all over again.
Yes, absolutely.
So what are the kinds of things that you would do to keep you motivated?
I would not follow my lesson plan. I would implement different things. Like if I know there's a favorite book that the whole class likes, like Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, Very Bad, No Good Day. I love that book. I love that book. I would read them their favorite story. Or we would extend circle time where all the children, you get the children involved. You say, well, you know, who would like to talk about what they did this weekend? Or did you have a good weekend? Did you have anything you'd like to share with the class? You can't follow that daily schedule because it's not going to work. So you're going to reinvent a schedule for that day. And if somebody comes in and says, why are you not following this? Because it's not going to work. It's a Monday. If the weather is great, we're going outside. We're going to, and hopefully it's in springtime, and you've got the flowers coming up, the trees are in bud. Maybe it's rain, and there's worms on the ground. The children get so excited when they see that. So this is how you keep them motivated. You bring them back in through things that appeal to the children. children, not so much as to what they say you gotta have as far as a lesson plan and you have to follow this schedule. No, you reinvent your schedule and your lesson plan to fit the needs of the children. And the needs of the children are that we're gonna have a day, we're gonna stay outside a little longer today. For snack time, if you know there's a favorite snack, you may even wanna institute that. And you may even wanna give a little extra. Because like I said, some of those children may be hungry. They may not have had adequate food at home for the weekend. And then you may even have where the kids let them pick a song or finger play. You got everybody involved. You notice how calm the room is becoming because you're pulling the kids back in. And they're like, hey, Miss Roberts got it going on today. We having a good time. They may even say, can we dance to Stop, Listen, and Move? Can we do Stop, Listen, and Move? We sure can. Let's have a good time. So you think of things that are going to motivate the children, keep them in tune to where you want them to be. And it's easy with little kids because all you got to do is just find or hit the right spot for what they really, really like, what they just cannot live without. In music and song and dance, and you got it. That's it.
Those are great things to do in terms of repositioning yourself to make it a more conducive environment for the kids. And it's not just about what the teachers want; it's about
right.
What the children need.
Because you're meeting their needs, and that's what you're there for. Children, they don't learn if you're not meeting their needs.
Very true.
It just doesn't work. So for a new person coming into the field, if they keep that in mind, they'll have a lot more easier days than a lot of days where they say, oh my God, I don't know if I'm going back in there. Those kids just gave me the fuck today.
Right.
You got to keep in mind, I'm dealing with little people, but even though they're little people, I've got to remember to keep them motivated, and I've got to find things to, I may have to reinvent the whole thing. I may think of something that I said, well, this may work, but it may not. So you got to be creative, and you got to be willing to say, I can try something new. You get a lot of new people, and they just say, oh, no, I'm following the book. This is not what I learned in school. Hands-on and that book is two different things.
So true.
And they need to know that they're going to have to stay motivated and be willing to work outside of the box. That's the key. With little people, you've got to do it. Other than that, you're not going to be successful. And it's also a real indicator to let you know if this is what you should be doing as a chosen profession, if this is really what you want to do. Because it'll come, you'll see it really quick. It's not going to take you 15 years to
see,
oh, I don't need to work with no little kids. No, you're going to find out in that first week. And you've got to have a passion for it because you just can't do it without. It takes special people to work with children and elderly people.
That is very true.
You got to have it. You just got to be a special person to do it. You got to have passion. You got to be willing to look at little people and say, I want to make a difference here. And then you need to decide, well, what kind of difference am I going to make? And you have to keep in mind it all has to be positive. Some days you go home, you're saying, I don't know if I want to go back there no more. Especially when the kids have knocked you down, pull the chair out from under you.
Yeah. So,
and you may have just had a rough night. Or you may not be having a good day, but you've got to do your best because it all comes out. Children can sense when you're not in tune with them.
That is very true.
It affects their behavior. It affects their learning. They say, and Mr. Alvarez is crazy that they could get her. I ain't working there. I'm not doing nothing she says because there's something wrong with her. Did you see how she looked at us today?
Now, you worked at both Head Start and in a private child care, correct?
In a private child care, yes.
So what's the difference that you see between the two?
Well, I'm going to tell you, when I went into private daycare, I knew very little about child care. Number one, there were no training for us. Whatever you learned, you got a book and you read it on your own. Simply because the people that I worked for, it wasn't about early childhood, it was about making a profit, babysitting. And
okay.
I think it's so unfair to children that go to daycare that, well, now with the state, you know, their demand is where they have to have so many hours in child care and in first aid and so forth. And I think that's wonderful, and it has to be documented because that means that you've got qualified people working with these children. So when I was in daycare, it was babysitting. There was so much I didn't know. And when I came to Head Start, it was like an eye-opener, the training. I was like, wow, I didn't know that. Okay, I'm going to learn something here. Head Start put me on the track to learning, to wanting to know more about early childhood. It gave me that push, and it kept me motivated because I found out there's so much you can do. All the places you go, it's one of Dr. Seuss's books where he says, oh, the places you go, the things that you'll do. So Head Start was like that. And it wasn't, you weren't boxed in. In daycare, you're boxed in. Because like I say, you know, the people that own it, they could care less if you teach it. And this is, I did not, Mike. Kids got to write their names when they're 3 years old. They got to know their ABCs and they got to write them. What are you doing in the developing skills? Nothing. Because you didn't know. And the parents say, oh, no, they got to write. And them ditto sheets. I hate the thing.
Do you think child cares have changed over the years? Or do you think they're staying the same?
I think they're staying the same, Thomason. And I'll say that because now 10 years ago, Christopher was in daycare. And his mother and I got into a big argument because when I would go over, they would have all this artwork. You know what kind it was, where everybody did the same thing and everybody looked alike. And I said, you know, where's Chris's work? What did he do? How did he want his puppet to look? Oh, no, that's not how they do it. I said, they're not doing it right. And then they had like an open house, and I went. She told me she should have left me at home. Because the questions I was asking. And at the end of the open house, the director of the child care center, she approached me and she said, you have a lot of knowledge about early childhood. Do you work? I said, yes, I work for Head Start. And she said, oh, I thought so from some of the questions. And I said, yeah. She didn't like what I was saying because I was enlightening the parents that this is not early childhood. These people are not developing your child. They got them sitting down for 30 minutes doing a puppet that looks like hers, which little people cannot do. Where's their own creativity? Where's their ability to be a child? How can they? Come on now. Three-year-olds, maybe some can write. Most kids are just learning how to hold a pencil.
Right.
They need Legos to put together, pull apart, so they can get those little fingers moving. So I'm, you know, not really knowing because I haven't been into any child care centers, but I don't think they've really changed. And I tell you, here's another indicator that lets you know that when you hire new people into Success Program, and they come from daycare.
I got
a hard idea. Can I, doing the lesson plan, we can make boo this. And when they, show me how it looks. Well, all the kids, you give them this ditto sheet, and, you have to cut it out for them because they can't cut yet. Give them some paper and let them tear it up so they learn how to cut. And then they'll say, we don't do that here. That's not part of his stuff. We're here to develop the child in more ways than one. Kids brush their teeth. They don't do that in daycare. They look at you and say, you mean tell me you got to brush off? Yes, we do. It's part of giving them good dental hygiene at an early age. They're learning. They're developing. So you can tell people that's coming from daycare that there's still a lot of daycares out there. It's all about profit. It's not about kids.
Okay. I was hoping we've had some change, but I guess that hasn't occurred.
I don't think so. And I'm going to be honest. Do you think it ever changed?
I hope so. For the sake of the children.
Okay.
I hope so.
Okay, yeah. For the sake of the kids. Yes.
Yeah, I would like to see some change going in, but I think one of the things that we really have to do for change to really be implemented, we can change child care from the inside out, but unless we change parents to want more for their children, it's going to be hard to change the system.
You're absolutely right.
I think we have to educate parents to want more for their children than just the bare minimum. And if they don't know, then they won't ask for more.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, absolutely right. You have to educate the parents.
Yes, we do.
When the parents come into your daycare, say, my child can write their name and they're 2 years old, that gives you an opportunity there to sit down with their parents and say, you may be right, but tell me about a 2-year-old. What do you think they would get the most of their day would be most enjoyable if they're writing their name or if they're learning social skills by working with the other children and they're playing in the house area. They're having a ball. They're cooking and talking on the phone and doing everything they see you do. Come on now. So you got to educate the parents. You're absolutely right. There's the change right there.
Yeah, we have to educate the parents.
That's true.
But you touched on one thing just now, and that's cell phones. And this question can either be related to what you saw at the center or what you just see in general when you're out and about. How do you think cell phones have impacted the interaction that parents have with their children?
It's sad. I can't talk to you now because I'm on the phone. Don't you see I'm on the phone? The phone has taken up whatever quality time or whatever time the parent had to interact with that child in the car, on the way to school, on the way to the mall, where the kids and the parent may even say, let's sing a song, or so how was your day today? I can't talk to you about that right now because I'm on the phone. Don't you see I'm on the phone? What did people do before we got cell phones?
I think they talked to each other more. I'm pretty sure there was more eye contact made.
And I think it's really sad. And that's just like video games. It's eliminated the social skills of these kids. And this texting, I don't need to see you because I can text you all day back and forth. And it's really, really impacting the social skills of the entire human race because everybody's on, you go to the airport, you go to the grocery store, wherever you go, you start driving in your car. People know you don't text and drive. They text and drive. And phones have put children at risk by their parents for being on the phone when they're in the car.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
In the grocery store. Mom, can we get some you, boy, when you shut up, you see them on the phone, or they don't answer them at all. They go into their conversation, and then they'll say, let me get off this phone and see what's going on now. They become so irritated because you stop them in the middle of their conversation.
Do you think centers should have signs up that say, like they do at the bank, parents, please conclude your phone call before entering the center?
That don't mean nothing. They have them. They have them. The parents ignore that girl. Just like the people in the bank ignore it.
How have you seen children change over the years?
Oh, my goodness. Children are not children anymore. They've become grown-ups.
In what way? You mean in the way that they speak or the way that they act?
The way that they act? Well, if I see my mother, she's smoking, I'm going to pretend to smoke. How my mother dresses, I'm going to imitate her because I want to look like that. They've got this hair is another thing. Little girls should look like little girls, not like little women.
That's very true.
And it's unfortunate because when you go into the clothing stores and you go in the kids' department, they got all these dresses. They're not for little girls. So who's going to put this mess on their baby? You walk out the store and there's this woman walking down the street, this little girl dress is shorter than short. All this deep V and stuff. Come on now. Yeah, children have changed. And it's unfortunate because it's the society that they're living in. Their language, what they watch on TV, in the movies, because the movie is R-rated, but I'm taking Pookie anyway because Ray Ray said he wasn't going to watch it. But I can take him. They're not going to turn him away because we live in a capitalistic society where it's all about money, too. So if she's going to bring her kid in and he's going to be quiet, I can charge her $10 for him and her, and I'm going to make some money. And the little kid is watching his popcorn while they cussing and shooting up everybody on TV, at the movies. The TV is just out of control because some of this trash they got going, what is that? My pastor said that Empire, they need to take it down. They just need to just take it down. And the kids know more about Empire than I do, because I don't watch it.
And probably me, too, because I had to stop and think for a minute when you said that.
Yeah. They can tell you what happened on Empire last night, because they're allowed to watch it. So they're not, it's a child, but they're living in an adult world. And it's okay with parents, which it shouldn't be. They talk to their parents any kind of way. They say, what? Roll, and here you go, roll their eyes. Girl, you would have got knocked down if you did that when you was coming up.
So true.
Mm-hmm. No. They have no manners. None whatsoever. Yeah, kids have really changed. And it's unfortunate because this is the generation that, you don't know. Well, I'm not sure about. You just don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely different out there.
Mm-hmm. Only maybe about, I want to say, maybe 40% of the children know what Christmas is about. You know, Easter's about, the Easter Bunny is coming. And he's going to bring us some jelly beans. I think that's really sad.
Oh, yes, it is.
It's really, really sad. Children are not being, they're not given any kind of spiritual guidance. They don't understand that is needed in their everyday walk of life. They don't know how to say grace before they eat. You look at it and you just shake your head because it's like, what has happened? It's so unfortunate because when I was a child, when your parents said move, you moved. And you wanted to say, how fast do you want me to move? But you moved.
Oh, absolutely.
When you went to church, you didn't turn around and look at the back door. Your eyes was pointed to the front. Because if you turned around and looked, you got the look and you knew you was in trouble. So you didn't play and you didn't talk back to your parents. These little bitty kids talk back to their parents and tell them where they gonna eat dinner. When I was a child, you ate what your mother put on the table.
Right.
Said, thank you, Lord. And you said, this was really good, Mom, even though you didn't like it.
Or you went hungry.
Thank you, and it didn't hurt you. And now, oh, here's the thing now. The children will tell the parents, if you hit me, I'm calling 911.
So basically, the children are being the parents, and the
Absolutely.
Parents are being the children. Yeah, that's a sad state.
It's sad. It's sad.
That is a very sad state.
It's sad.
When you were working in Head Start or when you were working at the child care, do you see a lot of bullying? Or do you feel bullying has evolved over the years?
I think it's evolved. I think it may have been there all along, but it wasn't to the extent that it is now. And we didn't recognize it as bullying. You just said, you know, that's that one little kid that really made your day every day. But you hadn't tagged it as being bullying because, to be honest, there wasn't a lot out about bullying. You just, you know, said that's that one little kid that's the kid that gave you the hard time. Well, really, that was your bully.
And how were those things handled differently than now?
Then you talk to the parent and you say, you know, John didn't have a good day today. You know, we're going to try something new. And the parent said, you know, we're going to talk about this at home and things are going to get better. I can, and, you know, you and I will talk at the end of the week. And we'll see how well, you know, things are doing. But trust me. The parents worked with the teacher. Now, the parent says, what do you mean my kid is a bully? He ain't bullying nobody. It's these other kids. And you know, he told me that so-and-so always is messing with him. So the parents are not supporting the teacher. They're supporting the children into being bullied because they're saying to them, you go to school, don't let them kids talk to you any old kind of way. If somebody says something about your mama, you can talk right back to them. It's okay. So they're not condoning it. They're encouraging it. And they're not working with the teachers to eliminate it. And that's why I'm so glad to see where, I forgot what school district, where those children were really given a harsh. I don't know what the degree of punishment was for them for bullying, but I thought it was fitting because it set a precedent to say, we're not going to have that here. And they made it known to the parents as well as the children. It's just not something we're going to do. So it is being addressed now because it's gotten out of control.
It really has gotten out of control.
It's out of control. And it's not acceptable. You wouldn't want your kids to go to school every day and they're being bullied. And the parents are going to have to talk to their children about bullying because some kids may be too afraid to go home and say anything. So you need to ask your kids, you know, how was your day? This is so important. You got to communicate with your kids. You got to talk to them every day. You got to say, because I asked Christopher, do those kids be bullying you? Do they be talking to you and be pushing you around? He said, Granny, those kids don't touch me. Good, because they shouldn't. And if they do, then you need to tell. Kids need to know it's okay to tell. Because, you know, you get the right bully, you'll scare them where they won't open their mouth to nobody.
That is true.
So they've got to be able to have enough trust in somebody they can go to. So parents really need to talk to their children and let them know it's okay to tell and it's okay to tell a bully, you're a bully, and I'm not taking this, and I'm going to talk to the principal, the counselor, the teacher, somebody. My parents, I'm going to let them know that you're bullying me every day. That's how it's going to stop.
Yeah, our children need to be empowered to know that they have rights too.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
And that's so very important.
Oh, yeah. In today's time, oh, Lord, yes. Like they got all these signs up. We speak up. We speak up. I'm so tired of driving up and down the street looking at that mess because you don't speak up, but you need to. It shouldn't be a sign on the street that says we speak up. It should be a thing in your home where it says you speak up if something's not right when you leave this house. Even in this house, if something's not right, you come to me. They need to empower the children, and they need to let the kids know that they're there for them. I'm not going to beat you because you said this happened. I'm going to support you, and I'm going to make it right. Kids need to know that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Do you think that the early childhood field is doing enough for socialization for kids?
That's kind of a topsy-turvy. I think it depends on the program. Some programs are like, wow, you know, they did this, they did that. Other programs, oh, we're not doing anything, or they haven't come up with anything. But I think it's the program, and each program needs to really reevaluate itself. Not only in management, when I say management, meaning the coordinators or whomever is in charge, the teachers need to look at their classrooms, at a center as a whole, even daycare, and say, are we doing enough? Should we do more? Are we missing anything? Just reevaluate themselves and see how they can make it more, or do they need to? Some people may think, you know, they're doing an awesome job and they're not doing enough. Because we go for a walk every day around the block, and the kids is out there on the playground when we come back, and they're just up and down the sliding board. That's socialization. And then they have to understand what socialization really is.
Right.
Because a lot of people don't know, Thomas.
That is so true.
A lot of people don't know. So first, and that's a good thing. First, they have to understand what true socialization among children, what it really is. And if enough is being done, do they need to relook at it, reevaluate it, and start all over?
Yeah, I think they need to first, like you said, start off with knowing what socialization actually is in order to be able to say that they're even incorporating socialization in.
They don't know. They don't know. And it's not funny, but it's true. Some teachers, they say they're the greatest teachers in the world. And they're not even hitting the mark.
No.
It's not funny, but it's true.
And that's a problem for everything, all over.
Absolutely.
So diversity, you worked in a diverse environment, but just because you worked in a diverse environment, do you think other types of diversity were incorporated into the environment?
Yes.
And do you think that that was just because of Head Start, or the diversity in Detroit is still important in childcare?
I think it was just because it was Head Start.
Okay, because Head Start promotes diversity.
Yes.
In everything anyways.
Yes.
So when you were just at the child care center, was diversity?
No.
No.
No, no. This is all about making a dollar. You know, these kids don't need to know about Mexico or even a book, you know, a song. No. You sung the same little song. You didn't think to say to your staff, you know, you need to go out. We need to get some new equipment, some new records, some new books, even some dolls that represent diversity, you know, all different types of dolls. You know, because they was too busy making that dollar. They didn't care if you knew about Mexico, China, or not. That was not your purpose to be here. didn't understand the importance of it, which is really sad. That's why the daycares, they really, really, really need the training. Not saying that Head Start doesn't, because it does also, because you never can get too much. But they need it because it opens up so many doors that you never knew. You never knew what was behind them. You just said, oh, there's a door there. I'm going to walk past it today. I don't need to, you know, I don't know what's in there. I'm not going to open it. But once you open it, it's like, wow, I didn't know this. Head Start with diversity is a great learning tool, because I think they do it really well. I really do. And then with the different programs, you got so many programs like, what is that, Vistas Nuevas? It's unbelievable. And they have that parade once a year, and it's just amazing to see the different cultures and the diversity of the people, and everybody's involved. So this is going on, and it gets better. They don't stop and become stagnating and say, oh, we can do the same old thing. It just gets bigger and better. So it's a good thing that they're doing.
Is that the parade that they do by Clark Park?
Yes.
Okay. Yep.
Have you seen it?
I have. Years ago. Years ago.
Mm-hmm. They still do it every year. And like I say, it just gets bigger. The communities become involved in it now. And, of course, the parents, they just take it to a whole nother level.
Now, we talked a little bit about men in the field, and you kind of laughed before when I said it. What's your opinion on why we don't have as many men in the field and what we can do to attract more men to the field?
I think the men are scared. I think they're fearful. And I think the men feel like there is no place for them, that they're not valued, but they are. You need more men in early childhood, because children need to know that the classroom is just not women.
Right.
You may have a little boy may want to say, I might want to be a teacher, but I didn't see nothing but women. I'm not going to be the first one.
Right.
You know, so I'm not going in there. So I think what needs to happen is there needs to be more or less like, how do you get them motivated? How do you get them to say, this is what I want to do, or I'm really interested and I want to learn more? So do you do workshops to attract them? Just like when you're out speaking at the conferences, what are the conferences doing, the National Organizations for Young Children, what are they doing to get men in the field?
Now, I'm not sure necessarily what they're doing to get men in the field, but I do see a lot of men at the conferences.
Okay.
Not so much the local conferences, but the national conference, they're full of men.
Okay.
There is a good proportion of men at the conference.
Okay, so they're offering them a lot of information on the national level to get men to come and say, I want to hear this, I want to be part of it. So what does the local level need to do?
For me, the local level just needs to push women out of the way.
So is this where, when you have your parent group and you have more or less like your parent-teachers conferences, or you have like where your parents meet monthly at your parent monthly meetings, that you talk about men in the field of early childhood, what a value they are?
Yes.
And you invite them in, you tell Ray Ray's mama, you know, you need to tell Billy, you need to come over here next month. We're having a really good speaker. And see if you can find local men that are in early childhood locally. And if they would speak at your next meeting, to get the men, to have them to come in and just visit, volunteer.
And
you got to get them motivated.
Right, we have to get them motivated. But part of the problem, like I said, is women are afraid. And one of my things I always like to encourage women is that children don't arrive here on their own. And so you're not that afraid of men. So you have to allow men to be men. And actually, I take that back. I met a man at the local conference. I just thought about him. And he asked me, he came up to me after I spoke, and he said that he was looking at doing a center in Detroit that was an all-boys center. And he asked me if I thought that that was a good idea. And I said, not only is it a good idea, I think it's a well-needed idea. Because women have been trying to raise boys for far too long. We're not equipped. We're not equipped.
Can't do it.
I said, so to have strong African American men to stand up and say, we're taking back our males and we're going to show them how to be men. I go, I commend you for that. I go, I wish I could help you to open it because that would be phenomenal. But that's what we need to get. We need to get men to say we want to come in and we want to help raise these children to be men.
And Thomas, so you know Joan Scales, you remember her? She had a center that was an all-male center. I thought it was awesome. And they wore little uniforms, they had to wear a little tie. I mean, it was working, but something happened, and I don't remember what it was now. And it's too bad because, like you say, see, this young man has a vision. And he knows where he wants to take it. And it's sad that it's not enough resources out here to take him on and say, okay, we're going to do this. And it's going to be successful because it's needed.
Oh, it's definitely needed.
And every
Definitely
mama is
needed.
going to be trying to get their son in it because they understand the fact that children need a male figure, especially little boys.
Oh,
It makes a
absolutely.
difference. It makes a difference in everything they do.
And when he said that, I was like, wow, that would be an awesome thing to have.
Yep, I agree. It's something that is truly needed, and it would be like, oh my goodness, somebody finally woke up, and this is how it's gonna go. Yeah, that would be a great thing.
Yeah, it would. But I want to thank you for your time,
Oh, you're welcome.
for your dedication to children.
Don't you just love them?
You gotta love them.
Don't you just love them?
I hope you enjoyed the interview as much as I did. Astora has always been a great resource when it comes to the early childhood field. Her experience and expertise have always been above reproach, and she does have such a compassion for children, which I hope was able to come through in the conversation that we had today. The two things that I would like for you to walk away with from this interview is, one, the compassion that has to be shown to the children that you are caring for every day, and the need to educate parents so that they want more and they demand more from the field for their children. That is the true way that the field will change overall. I'd like to just thank everyone for listening, and I would also like to provide you with other ways that you can connect with me. One is through my blog, which is drthomasabond.com. You can follow me on Facebook at Dr. Thomas Abond. You can follow me on Twitter at Thomasa A. Bond. Or you can connect with me on LinkedIn at Dr. Thomas Abond. Thank you.